From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, hey, folks. Welcome to the show. A really, really interesting interview on Tucker Carlson with Elon Musk. And they were talking about AI. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, I think that interview really should be enshrined as a baseline for questions about AI going forward, because from here out, it's going to be a part of our lives. And in most ways, we're not even going to be aware of it. Now, the thing about technology like this that learns, that reacts, and quite frankly, you know, they're asking questions, well, does this thing even have a soul? What? No. Problem is that it multiplies its knowledge twice every couple of years. Every couple of years, you can expect its knowledge to double. And what does that mean exactly? If it knows everything there is to know now, okay, at this point, everything known to man, let's say it knows it already, well, then what's it going to learn? It's going to hypothesize and plot the future. Now, whether it plots a future for mankind or without mankind, that's the question. You know, we're talking about it'll be able to discover new technologies that much faster, better ways of doing things, yes. But where's it going to go? Now, some of the points that Musk made, which really hit the point, it should be questioned. You know, a lot of questions should be asked about this, and the fact that it should be regulated, is that there are a lot of people in the mix that don't want it regulated at all. Scientists are saying that, you know, the people behind AI, and we're looking at Google here, you know, and whatever your view on Google, Google's not in it for you. And they've been at the forefront of developing artificial intelligence. This is what the browser platform is about, by the way. This is what it's been about all along, is gaining knowledge, gaining interactions, understanding how things come together, how people come together, how people communicate, what they communicate. And it's all going into this, into machine learning. Then the people behind this and, you know, in governments that don't want this regulated, it's because if it's self-aware, they want to give it the classification of a life form, a digital life form. Now, here's the thing. You know, honestly, it has to be looked at in the same way as a transgender man saying he is without a doubt a woman. It just ain't the case. Now, even so, though something can think for itself, and, you know, I really have a hard time with this, saying it emotes for itself. I don't know, but what if it, you know, considers you a threat? Well, Elon also covered that. And he said, you know, it's not going to be like Terminator where they have a bunch of weapons and robots and things like that. It'll be data centers. So what it'll do instead is just shut off your bank account. Shut off your bank account, get you fired from work, and totally disconnect your power or something like that. At some point, if these things aren't heavily regulated, some point fairly soon, they're going to be making the decisions for our lives. And within a very, very short time, the consensus is we might be its pet. And it's something that, you know, we honestly, that's something that isn't just uncomfortable. I mean, that's just, well, ungodly bad. And Musk put it this way. He said, look, you know, he asked Tucker, why, you know, do you think, you know, Tucker asked him, do you think it'll kill us? And he said, well, no, probably not. You know, we're trying to train AI to look at the world and explore it and to value what's in it. And we're in it. And he said, think about it like chimpanzees. You know, humans aren't going around trying to kill every chimpanzee on Earth. We put a value on the life form. But yeah, as a lesser life form. And we put them in zoos and conduct experiments on them. So I'm not really thrilled about the different connotations with the talk, because you know the you start making concentric circles out of, okay, it'll treat us like chimpanzees. What are some of the things we do to chimpanzees? Not very nice, because they're close enough in the genome to us to experiment on. And we're close enough in, you know, being the, what will be, instead of the highest intelligence on the planet, will come in a very low second, that puts us in that position too. So this is something to really keep an eye on. Now we're going to go into our news with DNT producer and talk show host extraordinaire Dede Denslow right after this.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. Dede Denslow is in the house. Dede, what's going on in the news today?
Yeah, I have got sort of an AI-related story. I also listened to the Elon Musk interview with Tucker Carlson. I found it quite profound. I often find Elon Musk quite profound in a very simplistic way. And you mentioned about the killer zoos and the zoos and whether we'll be treated like a pet. What if AI looks at life in general and says there's one species harming all the other species and says it might be better for all the other species if the human species weren't here? Yeah, it might be of a larger benefit just to get rid of us killer humans. Maybe the AI will take
Are you saying it's going to get rid of Democrats?
Wow, I'd like them to start there first, yeah? Start with them first. Give us the rest of the chance, rest of us to repent to the AI god that will rule over us. In fact, already, I think, controls many aspects of our lives unknowing to us. And what could be more concerning is, what if we stuck this AI, a problem-solving algorithm, and say, here's your problem. We want you to kill all these Russian soldiers or Ukrainian soldiers or soldiers in general, and then we stick them into drones. That could be a pretty terrifying prospect. And I'm sure there are military personnel out there trying to create this exact application. Anyway, using that as a segue into my story, George, Ukrainian forces have allegedly used a US-made unmanned aerial vehicle in an attack on Russian territory for the first time, or the first time that this has been reported. A Switchblade drone produced by the American AeroVironment company reportedly flew into Russian airspace from Ukraine before downing in Russia's Belgorod region. The Switchblade is a miniature kamikaze drone capable of dive bombing targets. In December 22, so just last year, Ukrainian UAVs attacked Diaglevo and Engels military airfields located 500K and 700K from Ukraine-held territory, respectively. I think one of those airfields actually had nuclear-capable, possibly nuclear-armed aircraft. And in February, Mass reported that a Ukrainian drone that crashed into an apartment block in Russian city of Belgorod was carrying British-made plastic explosive devices containing metallic shrapnel. So Moscow has repeatedly accused the collective West of enabling Ukraine to strike deeper into Russian territory. Washington has repeatedly sort of refrained or refused from giving long-range weaponry to the Ukrainians. But it does appear that the reach that the weaponry we're providing Ukraine seems to be getting further and further and able to actually penetrate into or across Russian borders. And my question to you is, how long, if this starts to continue to happen, it's happened on a few occasions, it might have happened more often than we've been told or reported, how long before Russia decides to interstep or start targeting the sources of these drones?
Well, here's the thing. Ukraine is actually trying to create that situation. They're trying to set up a Russian pushback against America and against the UK and against everyone else that's actually supplying them with money and weapons. The reason for that is, even though they're keeping it out of the news, they've lost so many people. I mean, it's honestly sad. The death toll in the Ukrainian army, it's not something that is something that you can celebrate. Okay, these are people, and they've been drafted. But Ukraine was deadly serious when they said they want U.S. soldiers on the ground dying for Ukraine. They've been saying this since 2014. So everything they can do to make that happen, they're going to. Now, what would the U.K. do or the U.S. do if, you know, let's say Mexico or Canada were attacking it with Russian drones? All right? They'd either say stop. Stop sending them, or, you know, you're in our sights too. So it's a matter of, you know, what Russia's tolerance is to this, how far they're willing to let this go before they start issuing ultimatums. And once they do that, honestly, they'll back them up. So we'll have to wait and see.
And my other question was a bit more futuristic, almost tying into to what you're talking about with AI. How soon will it be before, there are no pilots, there are no tank commanders, there are no, you know, armored infantry. Everything is mechanized and controlled by AI, or controlled from a distance. So all aircraft will effectively be drone aircraft. You think that that is the future, and that front-facing combat troops, pilots, etc., are going to be a thing of the past?
At some point, yeah, and sadly so. When drones, at the beginning of, you know, the advent of using military drones, I forget his name, but there was a military, I think he was a captain, but he was working in the Pentagon. He actually quit because, you know, if we start using drones, it's going to take the costs out of war and make war too easy. Too easy to go to. You know, if you don't have any skin in the game, oh, we lost 12,000 robots today. Who cares? Okay, who cares about that? It's not a cost to the people. And taking that cost out takes any incentive for diplomacy or peace off the table. So hopefully, you know, it's going to happen. When it does, it's a sad day for everybody.
And they could give decision-making, the to kill decision-making to the drones as well. So there's almost no, like, there's no conscience involved either. Yeah, of making a decision to kill a soldier, the robots will be making those decisions. And in fact, I can remember reading about a purpose of AI at a military level. Some of the top brass in the USA, they want nuclear strike decision making to be given to artificial intelligence. So we'll just leave it there. What could possibly go wrong, eh, George?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's when they decide, well, we didn't like you people either. So,
that's it.
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Okay, TD, thanks for coming. Oh, go on.
That's right. I'm done, mate. I'm done.
Okay. All right. Well, I fumbled that really well. So, TD, thanks so much for coming on.
Mate.
We'll see you tomorrow, and we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Jesse Jane Duff on. We'll see you in a moment.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Joe Biden finally ending the scamdemic today.
That's right. You didn't realize that the emergency was still on, huh? Because it's been over for 2 years for most normal people.
Nope. Joe finally ended the scamdemic. Everything was predicated upon there being an emergency. The reason the emergency has lasted until April 10th, 2023, when it was over at least 2 years ago, because without the emergency, there's no emergency use authorization. And without the emergency use authorization, there's no what? Gene jabs. And now they've ended it. Just in time for all the information to start coming out about how many people were actually injured, actually killed, actually devastated by these jabs.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
This is today's News Talk Radio.
After all, we got the best damn staff on the planet.
Yeah!
TNT.
For so many reasons, access to health care remains an enormous challenge for millions of children around the country. Imagine trying to manage a child's asthma while living in an urban homeless shelter, or growing up in a rural community where the nearest pediatrician is 3 hours away. Children's Health Fund has an innovative solution. A doctor's office on wheels that is actually a fully equipped mobile medical clinic. We go where kids need us most.
Visit childrenshealthfund.org to find out more.
A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. We have retired Gunnery Sergeant, retired Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, Jesse Jane Duff with us today. She currently works with networks like Fox News, Fox Business, CNN, NBC, and MSNBC, and CNBC. She also is featured in a lot of blogs and writes a lot of articles on big platforms all over the web. After 20 years of serving in the Marine Corps, she's actually got a lot of, to say about politics, the military, and diplomacy. I would think so. And we're going to cover a lot of ground today. Jesse, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you. I have to correct you. I'm not quite sure where the bio came from, but I'm not with Fox or any of those other networks. I'm currently a Newsmax analyst. So just to clarify so that nobody from Fox comes screaming after us yet. Yes, that's okay. And yeah. Marine Corps, the P is silent in Marine Corps. So it's the United States Marine Corps. It's a corps, which is a small elite unit, like you'll have a drum corps or a drum and bugle corps. Well, the Marine Corps is very small compared to the other branches of service. So, but it's, yeah, but no, not a problem. It's not your fault. But yeah, I haven't been on Fox News and probably, and I'm gladly not on Fox News for many, many, many years. I'm happy that I have swayed back. I started with Newsmax many moons ago before they were a major network. And the conservative element to Newsmax is one that I appreciate greatly.
Well, then I guess my first question is, can I fumble anything else today?
No, probably not, but you're willing to try. Okay. And being a Marine gunnery sergeant, I'll probably let you know. It's quite all right.
Thank you, Gunny. Now, like I said, we're going to cover the gamut all over the place because you have the experience. You're out there talking about all these things, and I know you're on top of them. The first thing, now, we went through the 2020 elections, and it was a complete mess. Okay, after the election, we had a lot of proof, especially out of Pennsylvania, that there was intervention in election through the machines themselves. And that's actually in court right now. Now, just today in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, the headline is officials are scrambling after around 20,000 voters received ballots with errors on them. Now, those voters may have to vote again. If they haven't changed anything from 2020 to 2022, do you think this points to a problem back then that they're covering?
Well,
up?
I can't speak to any corrections that are going on right now currently because I'm part of an election integrity group that is very focused nationwide on various discrepancies that needed fixing, basically legal fixing, to ensure that states were performing elections with the absolute integrity that we expect of them. So I haven't been brushed up on what's going on in Pennsylvania currently, but I would just dare to say that a lot of the problems that happened in 2022, Republicans were very, very short-sighted on what those mail-in ballots really meant. In 2020, we should have learned. And we came back in 2022 and didn't. And that in itself bothers me immensely that we were behind the curveball. We were still saying, show up at the precinct, don't trust the mail service. And when we were essentially telling all of our voters that the elections are fraudulent, so many people felt that their vote wouldn't count. We were very counterproductive nationwide in our efforts. I will say this, if you're in a blue state where it's mail-in ballots, it's not going to change unless you get a Republican legislature in charge. So what do you do? You make sure that those that like the Heritage Found, I'm sorry, the Judicial Watch has sued quite a few locations in the country that haven't been auditing their voter rosters, and they have found thousands, if not millions, of fraudulent votes that are fraudulent registered voters, basically that have not voted in a number of years, are no longer living, or aren't even at the address in which they stated. For example, I'll touch on this one topic. I know this one pretty well. Is Cleta Mitchell was the attorney with President Trump and was on the call when he called Georgia. Georgia, when he said, we can find whatever that number of votes was. I don't remember the exact number. It was over 1,000, I think 12,000 votes. He says, find 12,000 votes. Well, Cleta knew exactly what he meant. They had at least 10 to 15 lists, if not more, of discrepancies within their voter rosters. And they had, in one list alone, easily the number surpassed that 12,000 votes needed. Let's say that's the number they needed. I'm not quite sure. But it was a couple hundred more voters that were not registered at legal addresses. And Georgia law requires that you are at a legal address. So they were either vacant lots or cafeterias or libraries or things of those nature where these people didn't even exist, but yet they were voting. And that's what President Trump meant. Like, why is it that these votes are being counted when we know that they're not even meeting the standard of the law? And the Secretary of State kept trying to say, we've already looked at that, there's nothing there there, and would never provide the ample evidence that they had actually researched it. But I would dare to say that many people throughout the country are very unaware of what's going on state by state. This election integrity organization that I'm tied with Cleta Mitchell, it's well documented. We have reformed a lot, or the team has actually reformed a lot of these laws that are going on in the states. Because when you're looking at what's going on in Arizona, I dare to say we brought a lot of the pain upon ourselves. We knew that mail-in ballots were going to be an issue. Why were we still resisting mail-in ballots in 2022? That is one of the easiest ways to get the busy voter, the apathetic voter, the voter that's just kind of indifferent to vote. But we were not, we did not have our ground game going. We were not pushing people to get their votes mailed. We kept saying, stand in line, stand in line, stand in line. Well, when you go and stand in line for 2.5 hours, 3 hours, for every one person that's in line, there's probably five that just kept driving. Because how many people can really be as invested into this as someone like myself? How many people don't have other commitments, family needs? I mean, if you're a caretaker, you can't be gone for 3-4 hours trying to vote. A lot of the damage that happened to Republicans was our own apathy towards those mail-in ballots. And to this day, I keep seeing people say, well, you know, don't, mail-in ballots are bad. Okay, well, if you're in California, or if you're in Oregon, or if you're in one of these blue states, that is your only option in many cases. So why aren't we mastering it? Why aren't we mastering it? There's 9 million registered Republicans in California alone. There are seats that have been won in Oregon and California by Republicans. We have, I believe, 11 or 12 sitting congressional representatives from California in Congress right now. So if everything's stolen, we wouldn't have any seats. We wouldn't have any seats if everything's stolen. So let's get off of the stolen mindset. Let's get into the, let's tighten up the security of our elections. Let's master the very game that the Democrats have learned to play a long time ago. And let's go by the same rules that they are playing by and make sure that we exploit that mail-in ballot the same level they have. You go out and get a ground game. You get people registered and you make sure that they mail in their ballot. We cannot continually just think that the same devoted people are going to stand in line for hours at a time, because we've seen that that does not work. It's by the mere grace of God that we did take Congress, which means that we can simply shut down many of these fundings that have been going on. We're going after the big money like Zuckerbucks. Zuckerbucks was, that's for those who are not aware, Zuckerberg, who owns Facebook, was pumping millions and millions of dollars into Democratic districts where they were really getting out there and getting people registered to vote. They even have payment opportunities for people, for getting people registered, which is perfectly legal. Why is it we're not mastering these efforts? We can master the same thing as long as it's legal to the same level that the Democrats have. Otherwise, if we want to play by the old rules, we're going to continue to see ourselves lose and get discouraged.
Well, what can actually, you know, we're talking about doing things at the federal level, but the reality is it's state by state, no matter what.
Well, of course, and that's what all of these election reform laws are being put in place within each state. Pennsylvania controls its own elections. California controls its own elections. Oklahoma, Texas, et cetera, et cetera. And so there can be controls put in place for federal elections by the federal government. And there are obviously laws that we must be compliant in that. But the state, how they manage their own elections is obviously it's a very wide open net nationwide with what many of these states are doing. For example, Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a voter ID requirement, and we lost, President Trump lost Wisconsin. And it was kind of remarkable because we had expected to win it. I was on the campaign. We had like five different pathways to win. There was no doubt we were winning because we saw voter registrations going up in every single state that was a battleground state towards Republicans. Well, what happened is, because of COVID, man, the Democrats really, really utilized this one to its biggest impact. They have homebound registration in Wisconsin that did not require voter ID. Well, guess what? I think it surged thousands of voters, 50, 60,000. I can't even give you the number. I don't want to misquote it. But it was thousands of people decided to do the homebound without getting a voter ID. And it was ripe for fraud. So one of the calls I was on back 2 years ago, I believe it was either Arkansas or Alabama, and I apologize. I get the two states intertwined in my head because they both start with A. But they have voter ID requirement, and they told the Wisconsin rep, look, this is how you solve it. You do what our state does. You drive out to every state, every home where there's a homebound resident, and you get them a voter ID. You know, if voter ID is the requirement, then everybody has a voter ID. You don't do these little loopholes that fraud can slip through or fraudulent. We have to look closer at nursing homes where they exploit the nursing home vote. We've seen people that have been voting that aren't even competent or lucid or have Alzheimer's or have not voted in 5-6 years. Democrats have run into those nursing homes. They go into places where they can basically exploit populations that have often gone ignored or are not scrutinized closely. The scrutiny is up to us. A lot of this is volunteers, of course. That is what many political parties are part of. But we need our big donors to come in and have PACs, such as what the Democrats had used to get voter registration up and to ensure. And you have to be nonpartisan with your voter registration, but it doesn't stop you from targeting people outside the gas station saying, are you tired of, you know, your gas prices out in California with Gavin Newsom? Easily, you know, you're going to get a conservative person more likely to register to vote.
Now, here's a question, and, you know, specifically about the elections, because, you know, I've talked to a few people. You are, hands down, you come across as the most knowledgeable person I've spoken with. During 2020 in Georgia, when they did the recount for the general election, there were a couple of experts in there as observers that they went on record saying that the source code for the recount machines was changing every other minute. They kept addending to it. Okay, it was changing. The other thing was, and this again is Georgia, that every table had their own methodology to do the count. Therefore, there was no single methodology. They were coming up with numbers different ways. And, you know, if you don't know what's going on, it sounds easy. How do you not, you know, this is Trump, this is this. Well, no, you've got the whole hanging chat thing with this. Okay, well, this could be something or it could be the other, and we're not sure, or the intent is not clear here. What do we do with this? And well, this was going table to table to table. It was different.
There's not a lot we can do looking at the rear view mirror. You know, here's what's wearing a lot of people down. And myself included. We have to fix what's broken, but when we continually have conversations about what's happened in the rearview mirror, all we're doing is getting ourselves worked up and no solutions. I mean, we can talk about how hard we're getting hit. We could be a fighter in the ring, and we can just keep complaining about how hard we're getting hit. When are we going to hit back? So that, again, goes back to a lot of the integrity issues that have been going on in Georgia. They have tightened up their elections significantly. Keep in mind, in Georgia, the All-Star Gang moved out of Georgia in protest because they felt that minorities were going to be discriminated against with the voter ID laws that were put in place. The lunacy of this. The All-Star Game that was going to help Atlanta Black-owned businesses, it's a very high population of minority-owned businesses there, decides to move to Denver that had probably less than a 10% minority population. I mean, it was just small. But they want to make this political statement. So when the World Series was played in Atlanta, I felt like that was poetic justice, bringing that money back into Atlanta, because the politicians, the corporate levels, have bought into much of this malarkey that voter ID somehow suppresses a vote. But Georgia has reformed a lot of their election integrity laws. And let's look at what happened in 2020. Their election went flawlessly. It went flawlessly in 2022. Well, we didn't have any problems in Georgia. In 2020, they did. A lot of those laws were put in place, and they were effective, and they worked. So we have to give credit where credit is due. Will we always have a perfect process? Will we have a process that every conservative feels is, I mean, to hear conservatives, we all need to go stand in line and go vote, and we get one day to vote. Well, in theory, that sounds fabulous, but that is not the new world that we're dealing with. So we have to work with the laws that each individual state has in place and figure out how to master it. Otherwise, we're going to get crushed, and we're going to be that prize. We're no longer going to be a prize fighter. We're going to be sitting there in the corner, bloodied, wondering what happened. So I'm not real good about 2020 anymore. I'm moving past that. 2022, we saw improvement. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we wouldn't have taken the house.
That's why I brought up the question. It is the going forward. because it's, you know, it takes it out of, that's not the machines, that's disorganization is what it is. If, you know, if there's one standard for federal elections that everybody has to meet, if you, you know, the state's going to take part in a federal election, it has to be this, 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 or, you know, don't come to the show. I think they'll comply. And, you know, whether in terms of.
We're still a Republican, there's still state rights. So what I caution on is when people want to get, you know, conservatives are very funny. We want the federal government involved when it's to our advantage, but we don't want the federal government involved when it's to our disadvantage. Federal government oversight on too much can actually impede upon the state's rights.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Secretaries of states have pushed back on a lot of election reform that the federal government was trying to impose. And again, if we get the federal government engaged on one level, is it going to turn around and backfire on us on another? I'd say this. Secretary of States had to change the laws in 2009 to ensure ballots were cast and counted on time for military overseas. They were setting, there were certain states that had their primary election just weeks before the general election. So people were not even able to get their ballots overseas on time so that they could vote in the general election. And they had to move a lot of those dates back. As a part of that effort, it was called the MOVE Act, Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act. That passed under President Obama. Often you can get more done with a Democrat than you can with a Republican, and I'll tell you why. Because the Democrats are ashamed if they are not allowing, we made it a big stink, it was a big deal, that military voters were the most disenfranchised group in all of the United States. And they still are. Sadly, though, that MOVE Act that went into place in 2009 is not being enforced by the Pentagon. It's the Pentagon that has to ensure every single military installation overseas gives every single military member the opportunity to register to vote when they check in upon for their duty station and ensure that their absentee ballot is forwarded to them. We still have one of the lowest voter participation rates with active duty military. I haven't seen an IG study recently, but with probably up to 10 years ago, it still was one of the least voting groups because many of these military overseas installations were not enforcing the law. The Pentagon is not always an ally. The Pentagon is definitely not conservative. We can see that now, not just by the new woke policies. I've always believed that career politicians and career generals become Democrats because it lines their pockets, government money, taxpayer money, the funding, and it becomes its own industry within itself. You take a Marine out in, you know, who's over based over at Camp Pendleton or North Carolina, soldier, Navy, same thing. That's a different type of person. The politicians get into that Pentagon and start becoming lustful for the money that they see in their retirement years when they get picked up by these defense contractors. So my point being is the Pentagon was pushing pretty hard to ensure that they had electronic voting, and that's not what the law said. The Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act made sure that the ballots were mailed so they were paper because we saw too much opportunity for hacking into the systems. And Colonel Alan West, when he was a congressman, confronted the retired Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, confronted the Lieutenant Colonel female that was in charge of the department. I can't remember the part of it, of the Pentagon that handles this. And he says, have you enforced the law? She says, well, sir, we've updated the computers. We've updated this. People can access online. He says, that's not what the law said. He says, have you followed the law? He says, essentially, it's like you're telling people to go clean the motor pool, that you were told to clean up the motor pool, and you sent everybody up to the barracks. And that's what she did. So we have a lot of errors and gaps, but it takes activists. I would dare to challenge anybody to get involved with Cleta Mitchell's team. I have to look up the name of it. Maybe I'll have that opportunity here in a second. Because they are reforming the states. They're going at the state level, talking to legislators, working with the people within the government of the states to ensure that those laws are representative fairly. We want every legal vote to count, not just Republican votes. We want every legal vote to count. And, you know,
That's my position also. You know, I am a conservative, but it's the Constitution. We have a two-party system that only works if both parties are actually working. Now, that disconnect is another subject altogether. But the fact that everybody's vote should count, I mean, that's sacral to the idea of nation for America, for American democracy. So it's something that, you know, Republican, conservative or not, everybody involved in the process or, everybody involved in the process should be upholding everybody else's rights in the process. Agree with you 100%.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I would start with one of the groups that I would say everybody can look up is Who's Counting Us? And or I'm sorry, mm-hmm. who's counting.us, which looks like Who's Counting Us, which is perfect. But it's who's counting.us. And that's the website that basically is run by Cleta Mitchell and her election integrity group that I'm actually tied with, the Election Integrity Network. The Election Integrity Network is very, very good at training people. They have opportunities for people to sign up online and get training and to learn how to be poll watchers is one example. How your process works within your individual states, how to get people registered to vote, how to get people engaged. Keep in mind, Rick Grenell is running an organization called Rick Grenell, the former ambassador to Germany and national security advisor to President Trump. Interim NSA director, he had created a group called FixCalifornia.com. And people just throw in the towel on California. I happen to be staying in California caring for my elderly mother. I'm from California. I was living in D.C. and still maintain a residence in D.C. But FixCalifornia.com found out that the largest group that isn't registered to vote is your gun owners. And it's shocking. And the only thing you can think is, they must be paranoid of the government. They are paranoid of being on any roster. They're paranoid. For some reason, this particular group has grown distant from political activism, but wanting to ensure that they keep their Second Amendment right. So his efforts have utilized a team that actually turned Florida red. That wasn't Governor DeSantis. That has been a long effort of activism within the state that was focused on people that appear to be conservative, ensuring that they get registered to vote, having a ground team that goes to people and gets them registered to vote, getting them involved. California has been doing the same thing now. He has managed to get, since his inception of almost a year ago now, 10,000 people registered a month in California. They don't That's realize how powerful the wow. It is exceptional. So people like Mike Garcia, who was a former Navy, a Navy veteran, who had barely won his race back during the Trump years by like something like 300 votes in a special election, but he won it. He barely pulled it off. Well, we've ensured that he won single-handedly without any doubt this past time. And up there, Kevin Kiley, who is out of Auburn, California, that happens to be where I was born, which was a blue seat, who had retired, he took it. And Rick Grenell has managed to pump these efforts into areas where he knew that we could win these elections. They're winnable. Now you start concentrating, and he expects not by 2024, but to see a massive difference in California by 2026. First of all, California is ripe for change. This is the state that locked down the kids. When we had the 15 days to stop the spread, it turned into 2 years for California. Kids were not in school. They have fallen behind. California was the first to put into the lockdowns to a point where they were chasing you down. If you were outside on the beach, citing people, businesses crumbling, families crumbling. We can't even talk about the drug abuse, the alcoholism. I mean, many of us, thank God, that we have short memories of the pain that many of us were going through. But if you refresh your memory, most people who were under these lockdowns, and we know this from countries that are overseas that have suffered arduous lockdowns, it just destroys the human spirit to a point of compliance with the government, because the only way you can go see a concert, the only way you can go to school, the only way you can keep your job is if you get this vaccine. Then we find out. Yeah, comply. Now we find out how many people profited off the vaccine. Gee, no surprise, during COVID, the pharmaceutical industry created the largest group of billionaires. Still in California, they're talking about get the boost, get the boost, get the boost. And I think everyone out there unequivocally says, if I have to keep doing something, then it's probably not that big of a success. We know more about this virus than we ever knew before. Many of us got the vaccine, myself included, when it first came out, simply because I had a father in a nursing home. It was the only way I could visit him. Praise God, I did not have any side effects, but I'm built like steel. I'm one of the few people on this planet who just doesn't get sick unless I literally, you cough in my face, I rub it into my eyes, and I lick my hand. Then I'm going to get I have to really be just obnoxiously sloppy, and I will catch a cold, but all in all, I go without colds. So, but I cannot, just because I'm just remarkably healthy does not make it fair to many of the military members. We had 8,100 men and women get discharged from the military for refusing to take the vaccine. The population that was the youngest and the healthiest, predominantly male. 3,000, I'm proud to say this part, 3,700 of those who refused to get the vaccine were Marines. I was proud to hear that. I was like, hell yeah. They're the ones that just basically said, are you kidding? They thought about it. They read up on the information on the myocarditis. I know I didn't say that right. The heart mm-hmm. problems that young males have. Why would they put themselves at risk with that? And there was just two, and there were miscarriages among young women. There are so many questions. And when you even go on the CDC website, it did talk about myocarditis. They just tried to say the data was insignificant. Well, what is their definition of insignificant? If several million people die and you say only 10% died, but from a heart problem, but guess what? That was 10% higher than the norms, then there's a problem. And nobody wants to be that 10%. Whatever that 10% or 20% was that they felt was a low number, it wasn't low enough for me, because we all know that that number was based upon what? You're talking about how many people received the vax? Well, let's base it upon what is the normal number of young men having heart problems at that age? Far smaller.
Well, I want to add something into the mix. Now, I had a high-ranking Pfizer exec on months ago, and we were talking about this. And the conclusion is this. There's no difference in transmissibility. There's no difference in outcomes. There's no difference in mortality. There's no difference in anything. And he said, yep, no, you're exactly right. There's no difference in numbers of cases. You're exactly right. I said, then what's the deal here? He said it was the politicians and policymakers. That's what drove everything.
Yeah,
and
we can
that's
see that.
What drove everything. It was people that did, don't have any clue about medicine or viruses, and it was just about policy and politics.
Well, I have to say, though, I'm sorry, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birch had a lot of information on viruses, much of the information. Mm-hmm. Their views on it, though, on resolution were what I find concerning, at minimum. That's a nice way of putting it. Dr. Fauci is definitely not an ill-informed doctor. He knows.
Dr. Fauci is a causal factor.
But the Dr. Birch and Dr. Fauci are the ones that got this country to shut down. They are the ones that basically mm-hmm. lied to President Trump, betrayed President Trump. And then the next thing you know, they were destroying the election in 2020. They knew that this was right. going to be the Democrats knew, those that were influenced. Also, they had things to hide. Dr. Fauci had provided funding for that Wuhan lab for the gain of function research. For people who don't know what that means, gain of right. function is where you modify a virus so that it's more, has a greater impact upon a population. It can actually be used in type of warfare, for that example, where people become vulnerable to something that can be used like chemical warfare, so to speak. But we were funding mm-hmm. that. And Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, has been all over Fauci on that. But Fauci and Dr. Birch, I cannot take away that they are definitely scientists, but they are definitely, particularly Fauci, his agenda is quite nefarious, whether it be that he has profits coming in from outside sources. Because keep in mind, at NIH, they also get awards for they get bonuses, so to speak. I don't know if they're called bonuses, but they do make money off of their research that turns into a vaccine, or their research that can turn into some type of medical practice. There is lots of money to be made from their own efforts. But what happens whenever you start seeing money lining pockets, I dare to say that mm-hmm. Pfizer guy was BSing you on a lot of levels. Pfizer did not mind one bit. Pfizer still advertises.
I'm not saying
Pfizer
they didn't.
But
they could have pushed back.
A lot of these companies could have pushed back if they had a moral spine, if they had an ounce of integrity in them, if they recognized that they were causing such chaos throughout this world and persuading people to take vaccines that have been not even I don't know how long they are exempt from any medical malpractice. It was ripe for profit and it was forever. Ripe for fraud.
It was so, in the government contract.
I'm sorry. I would have probably been all over that guy and said, why didn't you resign? Why? Because you knew it. You profited. Your friends profited. If you know ethically, morally, that what you're doing is going to cause such distress and cause such massive incapability for people to lead healthy lives, let alone shut them down financially, shut down economies, why would you want to be a part of that? I mean, I look at the Afghanistan withdrawal and I'm appalled at how nobody resigned as a result of that chaos, seeing their sons and daughters getting killed. And yet these generals get up there and rationalize and deflect from it and say they did the best they know how. And now you got a Pentagon with a rear admiral as a spokesperson actually having the audacity to blame the Trump administration for that withdrawal. And he didn't see any chaos from where he was seated. They're flagrantly lying to us. And I think to myself as a young Marine, where I believed in honor, courage, commitment, and if I had even lied while I was late to a formation, I could have been written up and it would have derailed my entire career. Integrity was pushed into your head so hard because you knew it literally meant whether you had your career or not, if you were lying or conning people. And then you grow up and realize those rules apply to me, but not to thee. And the leadership is misleading people. So I go back to that Pfizer executive. He had every opportunity to blow a whistle and chose not to. So, you know,
I'm not saying he's honest or dishonest. What I'm saying is, I asked, where did the problem stem from?
I'm saying he's dishonest because he profits off of it. That's all I'm saying.
He profits off it. That's his business. But
of course, his business is to make sure that people are screwed up by his facts.
Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Jeez, this is too bad. I'm really enjoying this discussion. I got to have you back, Jesse.
Certainly.
I've got to have you back. Fauci, right before COVID broke out, 2 weeks before he broke out, there was a Senate report on people at the NIH that were possibly spies, and over 258 names came up, and Fauci was on the list. It was COVID that saved his tail. You can check out that report.
Where did that report come from?
Check out that report. That's actually the Senate report. I wrote about it. I'm actually an investigative journalist.
That's fascinating. That is fascinating. And I wouldn't be surprised. And a spy for whom? Who was he spying for? Was it China?
It was China. Well, by spy, what I mean is they're handing over U.S. Proprietary information for money.
No, I understand that. Spying. So he was doing that for China, probably for profit. Again, all of this stuff is profit. So it's the same as the Bidens. The Bidens have multiple bank accounts.
We've
that
got
are
40 seconds, Jess.
Yeah. And the level of corruption that these people have for profit, right now the Congress is investigating them. They had to go to the Treasury to actually research it all. And it's just disgusting when you see how much money these people all make. It goes to show you they have no soul. They have no soul because the ramifications of what it's done to the American people and people worldwide is horrendous, but they're happy. They'll retire in lap of luxury.